You are listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network.
It's easy because you're beautiful.
It's not easy when you sing.
Do, 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 do.
I say sing.
It resembles singing. You've got to give me that.
Yeah.
Like polystyrene resembles a rock if you paint it gray. Yes.
I love theme parks, so that works for me. We're talking about the latest film from a much beloved director, Jeff Nichols. You're like, who is that? Well, this guy did Take Shelter,
movie this year.
Mud, and Midnight Special, films that critics in general, like, come all over themselves for, me included. This is kind of his, like, maybe it's his gateway film to a bigger world. It's hard to say because this is definitely being positioned as a, hey, Oscars, look at me type of film. Not the least of which is that in a year where, in a time when everybody wants to make films about racism and various degrees of it, it's a film that at least ostensibly is about racism.
Yeah. I was at the Austin Film Festival premiere of this, and he had some interesting things to say in the introduction where, you know, he mentioned the other movies that he's made, but he felt like this is the first movie in his career that's, like, really important and that people see. And, you know, usually whenever you hear a director say something like that, it's a little pretentious. but, I mean, with this subject matter and, you know, the movies that he makes, he almost on purpose makes movies that aren't the huge blockbusters, but that he knows are just good movies.
The art school genre film.
Yeah, and so it felt very sincere from him.
Well, particularly because I got a chance to talk with Jeff during just before IFF, and he said that the reason he was drawn to make this film and tell this story was that he saw the documentary on the same issue and watched it and went, why have I never heard about this? This is an incredibly important story that you should be taught in schools. How on earth have I never heard about this? You know, like this minor HBO documentary, it's like the first time I've even known. And the you know, the basis of the story is Loving versus the State of Virginia, where this couple were...
Richard and Mildred Loving.
Were found guilty of, well, actually admitted guilt to breaking Virginia's miscegenation laws. Now, let's remember, folks, this was 1957, when a white guy was not allowed to marry a black woman. And the judge basically told them, okay, you can either go to jail for a very, 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 very long time, or you can leave Virginia. So they went, we'll leave Virginia. Bye. We're going to go to D.C. But after a few years, Mildred in particular just went, I don't want this. I want to go back to Virginia. So they went back to Virginia and it triggered this entire major court case. But what's fascinating in Nichols' approach to this, which is actually really accurate to the story, is that the court case wasn't about them. They were the triggering factor for the court case. And the ACLU went, you are what we can take all the way to the Supreme Court. And you have Richard Loving, who played by Joel Edgerton, who is a bricklayer who fixes cars to drag race.
He's
weekend.
A redneck.
He's
a Virginia, typical Virginia redneck.
And he's just like, you know, I just want to go home to my wife and then go to work the next day and then come back to my wife. And go to work the next day, and that's it. And why am I not allowed to? And then Ruth Negga playing Mildred, who's kind of more active. It's it's her letter originally to then Attorney General Bobby Kennedy that triggers the entire thing and the entire court case. But this is a thing that's happening around them.
Yeah,
it doesn't even happen to them. It's just like they're just waiting for like this to get fixed so they can get on with their lives.
One of the most interesting things about this film is really, in retrospect, exactly what you're talking about, that he has chosen not to make this a fiery, anger-filled film about racism. In fact, these are two very simple people, simple country folk, who really, really, really care about each other a lot. and are just baffled why they can't, what are we doing to hurt anybody? And most of this film is really just about this couple and their love for each other.
Yeah.
It's very microcosm, whereas there's a bigger macrocosm going on around them with this case. We bring in, Nick Kroll playing ACLU lawyer Bernie Cohen, but they're really a very small part of the film.
Yeah.
I mean, even the actual, when we're actually talking about this, it's being brought in front of the Supreme Court and they're all going, you know, you guys can come. It's a huge honor to have your case even heard by them. And they're like, nah.
Yeah.
Not really interested.
Well, I mean, a big part of this, and it's something Nichols does extraordinarily well, is that he writes people who are stuck in an extraordinary situation. Mm. I mean, it's one of the things I mentioned when I talked to him, is this really reminded me of Take Shelter. But if you just take Shelter and replace the bizarre, inexplicable supernatural force that is somehow surrounding these characters, and replace that with the miscegenation laws, it's the same story. It's like, there's this thing that is outside of our purview and outside of our control, and we're not quite sure how to deal with it. So, you know, Richard Loving in the famous line when, part of the true story of it, was that the lawyer said, is there anything you would like to, you know, say to the Supreme Court? And he just goes, tell him I love my wife.
Yeah.
And that's literally what he said. He's just like, this is who these people are. And it catches a particular time, a particular sense of raw community, and there's really interesting balancing act that Nichols pulls off, of saying, yeah, this is an era of segregation and all these, you know, everything terrible that came with it. But at the same time, in these rural communities, you know, if you've got a harvest that needs to come in, you don't really care the color of the skin of the people who come and help you.
Yeah,
right. Because your rural community is too small. You may not go drinking because the bars are still segregated, but at the same time, you're probably, you know, gonna hang out and, you know, road race with people. It doesn't matter what color they are. You know, it's just, that's the reality of life. It's mm-hmm. much, and it's very pragmatic, and he catches that extraordinarily well.
And
this is a very quiet film.
And
well.
I think
it's beautifully quiet.
Translating as well, that whole, the simplicity of this message, you know, that I love my wife, so what's the problem?
Yeah,
here
yeah.
is going like flying in the face, trying to save the simplest possible way. What is up with this whole racism thing anyway?
Yeah,
it's really just that simple.
That's one of the things I felt. I mean, like being a 34-year-old man, like obviously I know that racism is a deplorable situation and thing happening in this country, but this more than movies I've seen recently really did a good job of shining the light, like, what really was the problem? Like, what were they doing? What a person has a different color skin? Like, that's not affecting anything.
And it does it by not having to yell it at you.
Yeah.
Like, every other movie wants to be make you really angry, and that's not what this movie is trying to do at all. It's trying to make you feel as confused as Richard Loving did. Like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
What
yeah.
is going on? Why can't you guys just see that you're making a bunch of hullabaloo about nothing? It doesn't matter what color his skin is.
And the yeah. quietness is an inherent part of this. Because, you know, I mean, that Nichols makes quiet movies. Like, mm. He kind of reminded me in places of M. Night Shyamalan's Signs, which whatever you think of Signs, go back and listen to the sound mix on that film, because it's quite extraordinary. It's everything's down, everybody talks in whispers, but they can still hear each other because you're in the countryside, and mm-hmm. therefore if you stood next to somebody, you can just like, you can just talk like this, and you can hear each other.
Yeah.
And
unless the crickets are being obnoxious.
He does. Oh yeah. Oh, trust me, I've been on those sets. But you have this experience where everybody's quiet, and then they go to DC, and it's DC in 1957 through to about 62, 63. And they use, Richmond, Virginia to fill in because that, mm-hmm. it still looks like DC in the 50s.
It does. Right now it does still look like DC
in the 50s. But, you know, that version of suburban DC in the 1950s is still quiet by modern standards.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of get a little bit of background noise, but that's still too much for the living. So you just go, I want to go home where it's really quiet. Well, like, but it gives this sense of period so well.
Yeah, and they're also like, like, hey, my whole family is back there in Virginia, and like we were always like generation after generation after generation have grown up in the same town. It's weird to not be near them. And there's a sequence where one of the kids is, you know, brushed by a car enough to be like have a headache, and mom's like, fuck no, we're leaving. There are no cars in Virginia.
Yeah.
Well, I did kind of laugh, though, because one thing is they make it like as if they were moving 8 states away, okay? And they're moving from Virginia to D.C. That's at most, if they were the far end of Virginia, like a 4-hour trip.
Well, no, I gotta say, because I grew up in a farming community, and I knew people who lived there, who had lived their entire lives, who had never been more than 50 miles away from where they lived in their entire life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's incredibly accurate, because particularly that period, because like, you know, yeah, you could drive to DC in a day, but who's going to feed the chickens?
Right. I
love that. That was one of those details I think Nichols really brings, where it felt so authentic that it does feel weird where you go like, how come like they're treating it like it's the end of the world, but you know, the fact that they can never go back to Virginia even though it's so close, and that it's a big deal when one relative comes to see them, because you don't travel, you don't leave the farm, you've got too much to
do. Ironically, then it would have been so great to just go to DC, because there was not an hour and a half of traffic between there and Virginia back then.
Yeah.
You could just go to DC, no worries.
Yeah, but you know, everywhere to eat around the mall, it'd still close at 5. DC humor.
Yeah, even that in and of itself, like, was just kind of an absurd, like, what crime can you commit today where the judge gives you a choice of, right, you can go to prison for a really long time, or you could just, you know, not live.
It's
here.
Still Western
exile,
like Western law. You know, it's like you'd be out of town by sunset, or meet me here at noon. It's
like, yeah. Although there is a certain humor of going, your punishment is to leave 1950s rural Virginia.
Yeah. Joe would have been like, woohoo!
I mean, I can see how it would be a
rocket
here.
On his back. Just like,
I lived in 1980s rural Virginia, and that was still no good.
Yeah. I could kind of see it in the sense of, if I committed a crime in a judge is like, go live in Williamson County. I'd be like, no. I will live in the Travis County jails. That's fine.
The food is better in the Travis County jails than it is at restaurants in Williamson County.
Oh, gosh, but fair. We're going to get arrested next time we go.
I know, seriously. Michael Shannon, of course, makes an appearance, as he does in every single one of Jeff's films, briefly as a Time Life photographer who's actually... Boy, Shannon is moving more towards things where he gets to be like a not scary protagonist anymore. This one, he's genuinely sort of homespun charming. You're like, oh, I like Michael Shannon.
Well, I'm actually nice because I mean the Grey Valette photographs are a key part of the story, and there's one particular photograph that is just so moving and simple, and they recreate it really closely.
Yeah.
And there's so much of the story is caught up in this one photograph. And he's like, this is great. Because again, it brings in this theme of, you know, there's this stuff happening around them and they don't care. They, you know, they just want to watch TV. Yeah, that's all they want to do is just sit there and watch TV and then go to work the next day, and that's it. That's their lives.
So I'm going to go into final thoughts here and say, I feel like, where is the simplicity and the quiet are the key? I mean, they are literally the spine of this film. That's why this film is what it is it works because of those things. At the same time, 123-minute running time was an error as far as I was concerned. This is going to – the long running time for a film that's structured this way is going to turn off a lot of audiences. I mean, I'm extremely patient and was super excited for this film, and it turned me off. Where I was like, Jesus fucking Christ, I get it thoroughly what you're trying to say. We could skip a lot of this. I feel like that is the one really big problem with this movie, at least for me. But I totally get what he's doing, and I think overall he very much succeeds what he's doing. It's weird. God, I would love to see the conversations between him and Joel Edgerton as he's giving him acting direction to go, no, just kind of play stupid. Yeah. You're not real bright.
Well, I think he probably, just to interject, he told a really cool story in the Q&A where, and I think a lot of people have relatives like this, where, like, old soul type people, like, his grandfather was someone who he described as, you could be in a room with him and his grandmother for 5 hours, and his grandfather would never say a word, but you never had a doubt how much he loved his grandmother. Like, he, one of those people, and so he probably had a way of telling Joel Edgerton, like be that guy.
Okay. And then Nick Kroll, who, God bless him, I know he wants to go on to more serious things, but every time he's in something, he just comes off as kind of slimy. Yeah. And you're like, I'm not sure the ACLU guy should come off as kind of slimy. But he, even here, you kept waiting for him to be like, well, I actually have nefarious evil lawyer plans.
Yeah.
And you're like, no, that's, it was just a weird choice to play that role.
I kept wanting him to be Ruxin from the League because he does this thing in the show where he's like, Ruxin is a lawyer and he's got it. Like,
I was thinking exactly the same thing. But these are minor, those are both minor nitpicks. Like I said, the biggest issue is just the running time. Other than that, I feel like that Jeff Nichols has made another great film in his canon to watch. It's not my favorite of his movies, but it, and I don't know if I'd even agree if it's his most important, but he certainly, I can see why he thinks so and what it meant to him to tell this story. I give it 7 out of 10 carburetors that just need a little bit of tinkering. JC?
Yeah, I think he succeeded in kind of doing two things at once, in telling a great love story and also highlighting the absurdity of racism at this particular point in time. Like, we've seen movies during the time of slavery, and obviously that was a terrible time too, but it kind of, the movie kind of literally bashes it into your head how violent and terrible a time that was, whereas this wasn't quite that turbulent, or at least he didn't show that turbulent side of it, but he still showed how absurd it was and how stupid it was. While at the same time telling a really great love story between these two people that felt really sincere. The performances blew me away. I knew that Joel Edgerton is Australian. I didn't know that Ruth Negger was British. And so I heard an interview with them, and I was expecting the Australian accent to come out of him. I was not expecting a very thick British accent to come out of her.
I didn't know that until I watched the extras on Preacher. Yeah. I was like, what?
Yeah, and so That the acting in this is just extremely top notch. I think there are bits where, as it does get a little long in the tooth, where it spends probably maybe a little bit too much time with their time in Washington D.C. So I do agree with you that it could have been shorter. For the most part, the movie was paced pretty well for me. I mean, overall, I would give this 7 out of 10 old cars.
And then there was Richard.
I got to disagree with you on the pacing, because and you know, you talked about the DC segment. I thought that I was like, okay, this goes a little slowly, and then you realized that they'd been there 6 years, and so what you have this moment where you go, wow. This is how much these people's lives have been screwed up. I think Ruth Negger is wonderful in this. She feels very contemporaneous. She, you know, has this quietness about her, but still this kind of like, you know, maybe I can rock the boat a little bit and send him that letter. And that's as far as she's going to go. I think the tragedy of this film is that Joel Edgerton is so good at disappearing into the part of Richard Loving that people are going to think he's underperforming a little bit. B, they won't recognize it's Joel Edgerton. It doesn't look like him at all.
Very
he just
true.
Disappears into this part so perfectly, so physically. It isn't even like the traditional when people say that about a lot of actors, like, oh, they disappear in the role. I really didn't recognize him at all. He changed the shape of his face. He changed the shape of his, the way he, you know, his permanent squint, which is, you know, really,
and there's such a humility about his performance.
Yeah. Oh, it's astounding. And he does the toughest thing, which is play somebody less smart than him without it being condescending.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That he's a guy who's like, you know, there are moments where it's really clear he doesn't know what's going on. He didn't get it because people are just coming at him and throwing terms at him. He's like, oh, I don't get it. But he just goes, yeah, because that's what his response would be. I think Edgerton really pulls off something quite miraculous here. The great thing about this is, A, it does exactly what Nichols did, what Nichols has wanted to do, which is tell a story about a piece of history people have forgotten. And it shows, you know, B, it shows the stupidity of racism. It just says, this is stupid. Why are we even talking about this? This is dumb. But also it is and this was very important for him, was, showing what period rural life was really like.
It's
and take the condescension, take the condescension out of it. I mean, yeah. It was tough, he catches a mood in time and tells a very powerful civil rights story without hitting you over the head with a law book,
mm-hmm.
or having some ridiculous speech that you just know has been, just been dropped in and has been put into a character's mouth and feels totally unrealistic. Yeah,
it goes out of its way to avoid any moment like that at all.
And it does it. I think it does it so perfectly. I think this is, I love Nichols's work. I actually think this is his most complete film. It's definitely his most mature film. It builds on what he's done. It doesn't throw away his rule book to date. I think it takes into fascinating new directions. I really don't know where he goes next. But I really think he has the potential to be, the leading director of the next 20 years for doing really serious work. I've got to give this, a solid 9 out of 10 Nick Kroll's disturbingly bulging eyes.
Boy, they are bulgy.
Ugh.
I'm like...
That man is, like, one good sneeze away from going full Smeagol.
Yeah, he needs to look into thyroid medicine or something.
Something is awry.